ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, it's Brian behind the glass, and it's a Wednesday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. It's great to be back with you, Blank. Great to be back with you, Brian. All of the Hive, great to be back. YouTubers, you too. Twitchers, not so much. I could have done without the Twitchers for quite some time. But thanks for holding down the fort, guys. Appreciate it. So, had some issues getting back. I was supposed to be back yesterday. My flight got canceled Monday night, Blankers. It got canceled. Have you ever had to deal with a canceled flight, last flight out of town? It's not fun.
I got to tell you that I have not. And I thought about it. And by the way, I have to share something with you on that note that I discovered yesterday with our good friend Brian. Because of that conversation when we found out. But I was sitting here going, major, and I guess now that you shed some light on it by saying it was the last flight of the night, because I'm like, major metropolitan city like L.A., massive airport, and major metropolitan market coming to like Houston, was there not a way that they could have made it work for you? But that's got to be awful when it's the last flight of the night and you're like, now what? Do I got to get a hotel room? Who's paying for that? And all that BS.
Me. That's who's paying for that. Me. Yeah, it was a nightmare. Because, I fly all the time. I just assume they push it back. And then, the crew or whatever, they run out. They time out or whatever. Mm-hmm. They have so many hours that they can, be in the air or work or whatever. But I figured, okay, well, next flight, early next morning. No, I tried to book myself on that flight. It was canceled. So, last flight of the night, it was 6:30, too, Pacific time. So, it's not like incredibly
Jeez,
late.
It's early.
Right? Yeah, it's 6:30. So, we're in the gate. We're about 15 minutes away from boarding, and I get a text. Flight has been canceled. So, zero delays. There has not been a single delay. It hadn't been pushed back. It was just a single text. All of a sudden, out of the blue, your flight has been canceled. I was like, what? Are you kidding me? No way. And anyway, so long story short, had to rebook the flight. The early flight the next day was sold out. It was already sold out, so I couldn't jump on that one. So I had to do the 2:30, and that one ended up getting delayed for 2 hours. Then you mentioned booking the hotel, having to, the logistics behind that. It was, that was not great, not fun. But I do have a bunch of things that I hate about L.A., and you might. Okay. You can
I got
to
share this
too.
With you before you do that, though. Okay. We were talking about that when we came on the air yesterday, because you had the flight issues. When Brian shared with me that technically he's been on 4 flights in his life. But
Brian's only been in 4 flights?
4 flights total, which was 2 to their destination and 2 back. So he's been on 2 round-trip flights in his life, 4 flights total as a grown man. I was just, I was perplexed by this.
Yeah, that's a low amount of flights.
I'm not even going to ask you what you guys have been on because you have to travel for work.
I lost count.
Yeah, my work, I've never had to fly anywhere, so it's not quite. We're not quite dealing with the same experience, but the disparity between you two to me is obviously quite vast.
Yeah, I don't know how many times I fly.
I'm sure you lost count over the years.
5 times with football per year. Let's just say 10 times for basketball. Let's go with 7 times, 15, 22, maybe 2 for recreation. Let's just call it 25 times a year. 25 times a year is probably about right. Yeah. And, you've probably, whenever you were in your heyday, that's probably double that, probably 50. Well, actually, 41 games, probably
plus 80. Playoffs for a lot of the years.
Close to 100 a year then.
Yeah,
that's quite a bit. Texter says the flight canceled for anything other than weather. The airlines pay for the hotels. They said it was weather. I don't know how. It was beautiful in L.A. It wasn't bad in Houston. I guess it was weather in other areas of the country that delayed the flight. But, yeah, it was they said it was weather. A texter, oh, goodness, the Gotta Be Right crybaby is back. I am here to torment your life, 4106. I am back,
Sassy.
And you are worse for it. But here are things I hate about L.A., Blankers, and I'm not counting the missed flight. That kind of happens, although it was kind of rare. And I'm not even going to use traffic here, Blankers, because you know that that's coming when you go to L.A. Any big city. You know that traffic's going to be bad. So you already account for that. And you've been to L.A. many times. You have your in-laws are in L.A., so you know all about this. And we had a great time, for what it's worth. Went to Disney, did that whole thing with the kids, went everywhere you could see in L.A. We did all the touristy stuff. We had a fantastic time. We had a great time. But there are some things I hate about L.A. The first one, do you know how much grocery bags cost in L.A.?
Yes, I do.
Yes. What are we doing here? They charge you for grocery bags in L.A.
Yeah, obviously Lisa's parents still live there. So whenever we go to visit, it's like we're leaving the door. We're out the door to go to the grocery store, and I'm going with her mom, or she and I are going. It's like, do you have the grocery bags? I'm like, wait, what? Like, you know, they mean, no, because you got to pay for the grocery bags if you don't at the store. I'm like, yeah, okay, that has to be like, there's a way around that. Nope, sure enough, when you go to checkout, even self-check, they're counting how many bags you take. It's like 10 cents a bag. It's ridiculous.
It was exactly that. It was 10 cents a bag. Now, they are thicker if you're into that sort of thing, but they're 10 cents a bag. I've never experienced that. So that's one thing I hate about L.A. Another thing that I hate about L.A., look, the environment, yeah, that's important. The turtles, yeah, I guess that's important. I don't like paper straws. I'm sorry. I don't. I wish that I cared more to enjoy a paper straw or to value a paper straw over the environment. I am not a fan of the paper straw. It gets grimy. It's kind of gross. I hate paper straws in L.A.
Yeah. Obviously, the wife, big on all the vegan stuff, and she'll go that route. I don't care because as long as Starbucks went to the different lid, I never even use a straw. Even at Starbucks, I'm good. But yeah, I can understand why people get, because they do, they get kind of weathered and watered down and they don't hold up real well. And I can understand that.
All right. So the first two, I think, are fair gripes. Yep. And stop me if it's not a fair gripe. And look, I like the good old plastic straw. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm a throwback. Maybe I'm an old school kind of guy. Maybe I'm a get off my lawn. I don't care. Another thing that I hate about LA, the people lack awareness while also being simultaneously annoyed by everything. Like they have zero common sense. They have zero awareness. And then whenever they're aloof and get in your way, they get annoyed that you got in their way because it was caused by their aloofness. It drives me up the wall.
That had to be at Disney.
It was everywhere.
Because at Disney, it is like overwhelmingly prevalent. Everybody walks in front of you and they're looking
and
at the maps
the
and the phones and yeah.
No, but I noticed it on the highways too. Like the highways, or like if you're walking in the stores, like people just stop in front of you and then you're like, oh, okay. And then they're like looking at you like, how dare you be in my space? It's like, well, I wouldn't have been in your space if you hadn't stopped in the middle of a walkway.
Rental car?
We did, yeah.
Yeah, see, that's part of it, too, because I was going to say, you made the right call at the start of the segment by saying, let's not even bring up traffic, because that would be 1 through 10 for me why I would never live in Los Angeles, and we had a couple opportunities where Lisa wanted me to consider it, and I just couldn't. The way they drive, how much traffic there is, the fact that where in Houston it would be a 10-minute to 20-minute drive turns out to be an hour and a half plus. That to me is too much.
Yeah, I could pull off L.A. if I didn't have to work and never had to leave my house. Like if I lived like on a Malibu beachfront and never had to leave, I could do that. But if I had to be on the road more than like three times a week, I'm with you. I'm out on that. But yeah, they had general aloofness and lack of awareness that drove me nuts. Smart cars. Another thing that I hate about, everywhere is a smart car. I don't care if somebody else has a smart car. I'm even open to the idea of smart cars. Like I wouldn't mind a Tesla at some point in my life. But there's just, like, we had our rental was a smart car. The smart car would not stop yelling at me. Every single thing that I did ticked off this smart car. The lane assist drives me nuts. I immediately turn that off. If I look the other way, it starts beeping at me and saying they detect a distracted driver. No, I'm not distracted. I'm just looking at the beautiful hills. I'm just looking at the beautiful beach. I'm just looking at all this beautiful stuff. Smart cars annoy me. And I think that they're bad, too. Because if you, like, try to change lanes real quick, like, there's a big rate. There's, like, a semi or whatever that cuts you off and you're trying to just veer over real quick to get out of the way, these smart cars with the lane assist, they try to yank you back into your lane where you're either A, going to hit the semi, or two, flip your car. I am anti-smart car. I hate smart cars. And everywhere you look in LA, what do you see? You see a bunch of smart cars.
Yeah, I've never driven a smart car. I know that my biggest hang-up with smart cars are the people that are already putting it on autopilot, because I got a hard time trusting that someone next to me on the highway going 65 plus and doesn't have either hand on the wheel. I want no part of that, whether I'm in the car or next to it.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the there was even like cars that were self-driving.
That's like what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Nobody in it. It's weird.
Oh, that way. Yeah.
Nobody in it.
That's even
nobody.
Worse.
Yeah, I don't know if they were like Ubers or like if they were testing some stuff, but we saw multiple times those humanless cars just driving around. And the final one's dogs everywhere. I think that every other person in LA has an emotional support dog. And I know you love dogs.
I do.
No, I love dogs too. I don't need everybody out in public, every other person, needing an emotional support dog. There is no amount of emotion that half of the population of L.A. needs a dog, Blankers.
Well, I don't care if they have them, but even I respectfully, and I think Lisa, for the most part, agrees with me on this too, but we have five dogs. I love our dogs. I walk our dogs every day. I hang out with our dogs. They're great companions. I don't want to put my dogs in anybody else's space because I don't. If you don't like a dog, when I'm walking our five dogs in the morning, if I see people that even you can tell kind of right away if they aren't big dog people, I'll cross the street. I'll go to the other side. I'll go into the street and let them pass and then pop back up on the sidewalk because I don't want someone that has any kind of hang up with them. That's just on a walk. I'm not taking them in public spaces, whether there's a sign that says, yes, we will, dog friendly place or not. I'm just not doing that because, one, my dog, I have no idea if it's going to have a problem with another dog. Our dogs are great with people. But if you put another dog into the picture, I just don't know, and I don't want to deal with it.
Yeah, you're a good dog owner. Yeah, dogs everywhere. It's nuts. Texter, Austin charges for bags at grocery stores, too. I didn't know that, but Austin is weird. We do know that.
That's true.
Nothing beats visiting Boston and being served room temperature soda and tea. Yeah, that's not good. that's not good for anybody.
Boston, the accent is – the first time we visited Boston for NBA meetings and then on a road trip, I was like, I just want to hear the accent it live and in person. And I'm thinking, you're going to hear chowder, you're going to hear this, you're going to hear that. No, I got into a cab and he got cut off, and I heard every cuss word in the book with a Boston accent, and it was awesome.
Yeah, they're not nice up there either. their terms of endearment are a little different than our terms of endearment.
Yeah, for sure.
another texture, that must be in California in general because I lived in the Bay Area for 3.5 years, and that's exactly how the people are. It would drive me crazy, speaking to the lack of awareness while also being annoyed with the presence of anybody near them. Went to Ireland, UK this summer for the first time. It took about a week for me to start remembering to keep a folded up grocery bag in my back pocket. Super annoying. Yeah, it's weird.
Now what's your feeling on New York? Because to me, it's like L.A. and New York, it's annoying both ways. It's just L.A. is on slow motion and New York's on fast forward. Like, the lights don't matter. The crosswalks don't matter. People are always in a hurry in New York. They're going to do it, and if you get in their way, you're getting an F-bomb. Yeah. Whereas in L.A., they're kind of like, enjoying the smells and the sights and the scenes, and they're on slow motion. But yet they're going to walk right in front of you, bump into you, and then it's your fault.
No, I prefer the latter. I prefer the latter of L.A. than the than New York. Yeah, yeah, I would agree with that too. Like New York's worse than L.A.
And traffic sucks in both places.
Yeah, yeah. And if you go to a top five major city in the U.S., you're going to expect traffic. That's why I didn't have traffic on my list because you have to expect it and you have to embrace it.
But the difference is, if I get tickets last minute to say any sporting event, let's just say Rockets or Astros, and I know from my house, even with traffic, it's probably 35 minutes to an hour. In New York, if you get the same offer at like 3 or 4 o'clock, you won't make it until the fourth or fifth inning. It's that bad. And LA is similar. And I'm not signing up for that.
Yeah, we were plugging everything into Waze whenever we drove around, and it was like there was multiple trips that were somewhere between 5 and 10 miles that were like 45 to 60 minutes. Like, it was insane, the minute to mile ratio. It's nuts. Keith from LA, did you go to Dodger Stadium? So I actually snuck my way onto the grounds of Dodger Stadium, but obviously didn't go inside of it. I just went around the perimeter of Dodger Stadium. Uh-huh. I had always heard that the views from up there at Dodger Stadium are beautiful, and they are. Like, that's a cool play. I would like to watch a game there. I think it'd be really cool. Plus, the Astros won a World Series.
The stadium is so outdated inside that it always just mesmerizes me how, like, behind the times they are and how little space and, like the suites and all things they don't have. But that backdrop and where that stadium is with the skyline and with Chavez Ravine with the mountains and everything, it's phenomenal.
Yeah, it is really beautiful. And you're right, it is very antiquated. Like, it's super outdated. I agree with you. And then the last texter says, if you have the Uber app in Houston, you get a message about 6 weeks ago. I do have the Uber app, but I didn't get this message. Driverless Ubers are now in Houston. I didn't realize that. I didn't realize that driverless Ubers were already in Houston. Did you know that?
I did not. Now, that's the full-blown automobile, or is that those little mini robot things that they're delivering pizzas with and stuff?
I the way that I read the text, it's the automobile.
Because on you would know this maybe more than I would, but on U of H campus, that's where one of the test areas was for those smaller little mini vehicles.
Yeah, like the food deliveries.
Yes.
Yeah, and they're like tiny. Like, they're not even on the road. They're on the sidewalk. Yeah, those are – yeah, I know what you're talking – they still have them. And they work fine, but, I mean, you know, they're on the sidewalk. They're not the road. Like, you can get away with it on the sidewalk, I think. On the road, not so much. All right, are all those fair, the 10-cent bags, paper straws? Yeah, I think that those are fair gripes about
well,
the city.
Well, and gas
LA.
Prices.
Yeah, I feel like that goes with the territory, too, though. Like, you know it in advance. Like, these are things that kind of like, oh, okay, epiphany moment. Like, going to L.A., I knew the gas was going to be high. I knew traffic was going to be bad. So I didn't put those on my list because I knew that beforehand. These were things that, like, oh, I didn't know that they had 10-cent bags or paper straws or that dogs are literally everywhere on Rodeo Drive. Like, okay. All right. All right. The stick to sports people are not very happy right now.
Good. That's where we like to start this thing.
713-780-ESPN. We're on the Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. On YouTube at ESPN Houston. Twitter, Blankers at Pac-Man. Joel Bryan at Sacked by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Plenty to get to today. Kyle Tucker. We'll talk about that trade in the aftermath of Kyle Tucker as well. How can you trust Dana Brown at this point? We'll get into some of the Texans, too, coming off the big win over the Dolphins where they have clinched the division. When we come back, though, I don't think the Texans are getting enough appreciation for winning the division, in fact. 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, tis the season, and we know with that season comes a ton of sporting events, and if you are looking to maybe skip as much time as you can with a lot of those extended family members and relatives and spend a whole lot more time watching the games that are on television, well, maybe you want to put some money down on those games so you can make them even more interesting. That's why I'm telling you about MyBookie all the time, because MyBookie is the place you should go because it's fun, it's easy, and when you want to get started, all you got to do is go to MyBookie.ag and use the promo code that I always tell you about, Bet975. You can get a 50% bonus on your very first deposit. That's right. MyBookie is going to give you more money so you have more chances to win by using our promo code Bet975. And you can play all the sports that are on, college and pro basketball. You can play college and pro football, soccer, golf, and a whole lot more. It's all right there at your fingertips. You can use their website or you can use the app. You can use your computer or you can use your phone. It's absolutely fantastic, and you can do it all in the confines of your home or wherever you want to do it. In no time at all, you can be placing bets and having fun, and it's a breeze to navigate on either of your devices, and it's all for the taking. And all you got to do is remember the code. It's always Bet975. So when you go to the site and you want to bet on sports, that's what I'm talking about. If you want to get on a site with like-minded people as you're betting on sports and see what they're talking about, you can do it at mybookie.ag. It's also simple, and even when there's not sports going on or you want your Vegas fix, you don't have to fly to Vegas or drive to Louisiana. You can play casino games right there, and live dealers are standing by. Go to mybookie.ag right now. Get it going, get it started, and you can get all the fun and games in moments time and be ready to go for this great sports season. And there's also a rewards program called MyBookie Plus that you get enrolled in, and you can get better rewards and better opportunities based on how frequently you play. Check it out today. As I always tell you to do, you can bet anything, anytime, anywhere with the only place I tell you to do it. It's mybookie.ag and use our promo code Bet975.
ESPN 97.5.
I assumed you knew. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Texture, I enjoyed the non-sports convo. I'm definitely New York over L.A., though. New York's more of a grimy hustle and bustle vibe, whereas L.A.'s a bunch of softies. I think that's fair.
I guess that's the difference assessment between fast forward and slow motion in a little more harsh way. Yeah.
Isn't that where Granato moved, was L.A.?
Oh, yeah. Big
time. He didn't give me an invitation. He didn't reach out at all. All I've done in my life is try to please one John Granato, and he doesn't give me an invite to his
just police. Throw this Jeff crap out there to get clicks.
Yeah, no invite to the, you know, Granato Palace there in L.A.
Did he even know you were going?
I have no idea. We don't speak. He hasn't talked to me in a very, very long time. So another texter.
I'll text him. Don't worry.
Texter in the Hive. I went to Wrigley in June to the Ryan Sandberg statue reveal and was shocked at how small and old it was. It was awesome. Yeah, I loved Wrigley. Wrigley was awesome. Yeah, I loved that
place. I started going when I was in college and was never a Cubs fan. But that's a stadium that I say it's a lot like Lambeau in the fact that whether you're a fan of the team or not, you go because the people are so warm and so friendly, and literally the friendly confines. They're buying you beer, and you know, the whole atmosphere and how it's just dropped in the middle of a portion of the city is fantastic.
Yeah, that's a great way to describe it. And I'm obviously not a huge Cub fan, but I loved Wrigley. Wrigley was the flat-out best. All right, 713-780-ESPN. So the Texans locked up the division with the win over the Dolphins, and the Colts did what the Colts do, and yeah, this is our team. Woo! They all, whatever. The Texans win the division for the second year in a row. I don't feel like it's being appreciated enough. Like, there's 3 weeks left in the season, and the Texans have already locked up a division. And yes, I know it's not this murderer's row. It's not one of the top divisions in the NFL. I get that. And the Texans' offense has left much to be desired. Like, I get the notion and I get the argument for why people aren't over the moon about the Texans. But do we forget where this team was just not that long ago?
Doesn't matter, Brian. But AFC South champions 2 years in a row, Brian.
Yeah, but you guys are back in the...
Doesn't matter what it looked like. Back in the playoffs. Looking forward to the playoffs.
Exactly.
Go ahead. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt.
Didn't mean to interrupt. Yeah,
right.
You did. Yeah. You meant to interrupt there, Mr. O'Brien. But, like, the Texans have won the division back-to-back years. They went from being a team that won 11 games in a three-year span, 11 wins combined in a three-year span, to now winning the division title back-to-back. There's only 8 teams in the NFL that win the division. I feel like we're not appreciating the AFC South champ. And I know that's not the goal. I know it's not the end result. I know it's not the desire. But it's the first step along the way. And from an organization that, again, won 11 games in a three-year span just 3 years ago, I feel like we're not appreciating the division title enough, Blankers.
I think it's a fair point. I think that from a fan perspective, to kind of in their defense, the first thing that I would say is, well, you won it when no one was paying attention, because everybody was hyper focused on the Dolphins game. They got the win. The game was over, and I don't think enough people were dialed into the fact that there wasn't going to be this locker room celebration and shirts and hats and interviews and all those things, because you needed help from another team. And I don't know how many fans even knew you needed help from another team like the Broncos, and then that outcome would decide it. But then because you got it, because the Broncos beat the Colts and it was kind of late in the day, I think it lost a lot of luster. I think a lot of people were like, eh. And then the next day they went, oh, really? Okay. Well, now let's focus on who we're going to play and how we're going to play and what needs to happen between now and then. And I think it got kind of swept under the rug. It's unfortunate, but maybe that's the first argument as to why.
Yeah, I don't know how much weight that argument, actually stands. Like, I get it. Like, you didn't have the moment where, like, you win the game and then you celebrate. And maybe that does come into play a little bit. But to me, it's more of how we view the Houston Texans relative to the top teams in the NFL. Look, yeah. I'm not calling the Texans a Super Bowl contender. I just feel like, look, you're going to hang a banner, and yes, it's just a cap and a T-shirt. It's not actually, like, I heard C.J. Stroud say, look, it's only step one. We don't care too much about hats and T-shirts. We're trying to get hardware around here. And I love that attitude from a quarterback. But at the same time, it's more like I sense a lot of negativity when it comes to the Houston Texans, and I feel like there should be more positivity when it comes to the Houston Texans, because, look, if whenever DeMeco was hired, like if you go back to that point in time, right, when DeMeco got hired, and there was people saying that DeMeco wasn't interested in the organization, he didn't love, like, the ownership, like he sued them, and there were reports that he wasn't interested in the job. At that point in time, the Houston Texans went from David Culley, Lovie Smith. They were thinking about hiring Josh McCown not once, but twice.
I know analytics has those things out there.
He is fired. He's fired on all cylinders.
He's happy to see me is what it is. You were coming off the heels of Jack Easterby. Bill O'Brien as a general manager ruined the franchise. Everybody was saying they weren't going to watch the Texans until Cal McNair sold the team. Remember that?
Yes, I do.
They were talking about they weren't going to watch the Texans until Cal McNair sold the team. That was 2 short years ago. That was when DeMeco Ryans took the job. And what has happened since then? They've won 2 division championships, yet we're kind of sour on the Houston Texans whenever I think that we should be like, wow, this has been a great story in these last 2 seasons.
May I present Exhibit B, counselor? Because Exhibit B is most fans have short memories and high expectations. So the fact that the minute that they overachieved last season, all those rebuild discussions and all those guessing as to how long the rebuild was going to take went out the window, and it was suddenly, okay, now we're good again. How good can we be? And then the bar gets set to a different level. And it's a lot of times it's unfair. It's unfair to the team. It's unfair to have those expectations. But as fans, that's exactly how that kind of cosmic shift happens, to where We're going to have a short memory, and that those days are behind us. Now it's how far can we go? So at the start of the year, it was immediately, we're going to win the division again. Forget the fact that you went to the final game, to one of the final plays of that game to get that division title. Now it's almost an assumption that we're going to win the division again. How far do we need to go after we win the division to make the season a success? And so it's unfair, but it's realistic in the fact that that's how most fan bases react, and that's how that they judge their team. And because of the fact that this was a foregone conclusion in a lot of fans' minds at the start of the year, they just looked at this like, okay, yeah, cool. Yeah, that was number one on the checklist, but we got plenty more boxes we got to check off.
I think that's what it is. I think that is what it is. I think it is the bar from last season, and I also think we live in a championship or bust society. Not saying that that's wrong, because I think that the goal should be championships and chasing after the ultimate goal, the championship. But I think that's where it's at. I think it's the bar from last year and then also having the championship or bust mentality, which I get. I just also think that the negativity is outweighing what the season has actually been for the Houston Texans. I think that the two division titles, back-to-back division titles, have been underappreciated. And I also feel like the Texans are starting to get disrespected a bit. Like, again, like I don't think that the Texans are a top team in the NFL. I don't think that they're going to win a Super Bowl. Now, I do think that their defense can play with anybody in the NFL. But when I see things like this, like The Athletic has the Houston Texans as the number 13 team in the NFL. They have them behind the L.A. Rams.
Ooh.
Okay, that's disrespectful. They have them behind the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I think that's disrespectful. They have them behind Washington, who just beat the Saints by one. I think that's disrespectful. They have them behind Denver. That's disrespectful. So this is kind of like, where do you think of a team and where should they be? It's kind of the C.J. Stroud conversation from like last week or the week before. Like, yeah, he's not a top five quarterback, but he's probably still top 10, and I feel like he's being disrespected when you put him 15th. I feel the same way with the Texans. Are they a top five team? No. But do I feel like they're being disrespected whenever you say they're not in the top 10? Yeah, I absolutely do. So I feel like the Texans are being disrespected as well.
Yeah, I think, and then there's the different angles, right? I think I'm speaking on those first two points from fans that are diehards or fans that are dedicated to this team. From a national perspective, I think that you're going to see a lot of that because the minute that you see the Aziz play and you see the team, you know, lose in a way like the Detroit game on national TV or the series of national TV games where you were underwhelming, they immediately think, well, that's the way it's going to be the rest of the season. They're done. And they don't realize, hey, we've been saying all along, this roster is extremely talented. They have a lot of big-time players on this roster. It's just that the inconsistency has been all season long. They haven't been able to kind of present the full package. When the offense is good, the defense isn't, and vice versa. Scoring in the first half versus the second half, and you can go on and on. But I think from a national perspective, you watch this team, and they only get they pay attention more likely to the national games than others and go, is it fool's gold? You know, is it the fact that, yeah, they're good, they're okay, they're good, they're going to win the division even possibly, but are they really that good? And the way that they're losing tells me this team isn't with those upper echelon teams. But when you look at it like we do and you realize on both offense and defense, and especially at skill positions, you have so much talent and a lot more talent than most teams in the NFL, and you have a really good quarterback, you always have a chance. And I think that's why we look at it differently than the national media types.
Yeah, I think it's a good way of putting it. 713-780-ESPN. I think if Blank's point is true, it makes the Texans fan base seem unintelligent. I think that was to the first point about, like, there wasn't that win where you were able to get over. Like, if you won the game and you clinched the division versus watching it on TV, it feels different, which I do think feels different. It's kind of anticlimactic.
It is, but I think that I'm not trying to diminish the intelligence of the fan base. I think that all fan bases are like this. And when you not only win the division and win a playoff game last year, you're starting to already set the bar higher. But then when you go through the offseason where you know Nick hit on two defensive backs that have been key players for this team, when he went out and spent money when a lot of teams just won't spend money in this town the way that they did, and they got Daniil Hunter, and they traded for Mixon, and they traded for Diggs, and they got Autry, and they got Aziz, and they kept adding, and you're like, oh, wait a minute now. If they were this good last year and they added all these pieces and drafted well, there's a chance this team could be a lot better. And then you hear the rumblings preseason of a underrated sexy pick for the Super Bowl and a chance to win the AFC. That's when everybody starts going, okay, I'm in. I'm buying in, and I'm believing, and I'm going to be all in on this team.
Yeah. Maybe it's because, like, whenever you talk about expectation, you know, I think that our expectations at the start of the year, you and I specifically, were pretty realistic.
Yeah.
And maybe that's where I don't feel like they've lacked expectation. Like, did I think their offense was going to be better? Yes. But their defense is probably better than I thought.
Yep.
Their win total is right on par with what we thought. So maybe that's where it's at, where, you know, our expectations were second round of the playoffs, not necessarily AFC championship. Another texture, I haven't watched much of the Texans. From what everybody says, we won the division but won't make it past the first round. See, I think if you
doesn't
lose
matter,
the
Brian,
first round at home.
AFC South champions 2 years in a row, Brian.
Yeah, but you guys are back in the
– Doesn't matter what it looked like. Back in the playoffs. Looking forward to the playoffs.
Exactly.
Go ahead. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt.
I love the yes, but from Brian T. Smith there at the beginning. Yes, but. And then Brian just or Bill O'Brien just interrupts him. But, yeah, losing in the first round to me would be something that would be – pretty devastating from an expectation point of view.
Yeah.
But if you win that and then lose on the road in the divisional round, that's kind of where I thought they'd be.
Yeah, I mean, look, Brian can speak for the fact that, you know, he had a little more grandiose expectations in terms of the wins and losses. But I think that we looked at this and said, from the schedule to the fact that they did kind of jump the bar a little bit and fast forward the kind of the path they were on to kind of get back to respectability and beyond, that we were pretty realistic in the fact that, look, even if it doesn't happen this next season, they're still on the right path. And they still have a lot of talent to where they can continue an upward climb. It's not over if they don't do it this next season. And that's where a lot of the realism settled in. But I think from a fan's perspective, look, I think, again, whether it's realistic or not, when you won a playoff game a year ago and then went and were in the game against Baltimore for the first half, at least in the second round, the expectation is you got to do at least that, or at the end of the year, they will be extremely disappointed.
And I think that speaks to where the fan mindset would be if they are not excited about this division championship. And I think you nailed it. Like, whether it be reasonable or not, it doesn't really change the fact that a lot of fans who have been with this team since 2002 are coming from the mindset of, we've seen them make the playoffs. We've seen them win the division games. It's been, 23 years now into this franchise. Like, you've shown us the division championships. You've shown us the first round win and then getting crushed in the second round against New England, getting crushed in the second round against the Ravens last year. We've seen that. Until you do something we haven't seen, it's hard to buy in fully, especially when the expectations were set so high that this team with Stroud and D'Amico was different than all past disappointments. But if it just ends up in the same spot as those previous disappointments, then it doesn't really feel much different.
I feel like that's just so battered Houston sports fan
syndrome.
It is, syndrome,
but though, I think that's where a lot of people are.
I don't think that that's right. Like, you went 4-12, 4-13, 3-13, and then you're not happy about back-to-back division titles? Like, what are we doing here? Like, what do you want to embrace the suck again? Do you want to go back to David Culley and Lovie Smith?
That's kind of making it like an extreme opinion. The opinion is not, no, let's sell everything. It's just like, I thought this was different and it's the same.
I just don't know how you can be happy then. Like,
enjoy the moment, but it just, I mean,
I don't know if they are. I get the, not speaking totality here,
sure,
but like the majority. I feel like the majority is not thrilled with where the Texans are right now, this very moment.
No, I think that's because of the fact that the false expectations start sinking in when you see the expedited success, and suddenly it's like, well, if they did this last year, then they should at least do that again this year, and they don't factor in the kind of things that we deal with on a daily basis, from the schedule to the injuries to, you know, to the offensive line and the diminishing skills on certain players. You look at all those things differently from our perspective. From their perspective, it's like, well, if they did that last year, then my expectation is they're going to do better than that the following year, and they're not factoring in all the different ways that it can possibly take a half step back.
I know that the regular season isn't the end-all be-all. Obviously, you get graded on the postseason. But if you win one more game, you're at 10 wins. Same that you had last year, with a much more difficult schedule. So like 10-7 this year versus 10-7 last year, I actually think is a better result considering the schedule that you play. Now, what happens in the postseason is going to be the driving factor here too. But if like you go 10-7 this year, let's say you win the wild card, you lose in the divisional round like last year. So it's an exact result when you look at the win-loss record and when you look at the playoff round exit. Wouldn't that be a better year?
I think from the fans' perspective is, it's the same thing as it was a year
right,
ago.
But what do you think, though? Like, if you're 10-7, you exit the divisional round this year versus last year with the difference in strength of schedule, don't you think that's a
better
season?
Because of the fact that you had a tougher, like you said, you had a tougher schedule, and the fact that you had to endure some setbacks along the way with injuries, suspensions, and a less than stellar performance from your offensive line when the expectation was it was going to be a top half at worst offensive line. That, yeah, there's no doubt in my mind, looking at this team, that's a better accomplishment than last year, no matter how much you may have thought that they weren't going to win the division or be a team that made the playoffs a year ago. I think this year, because of all the things that they had to overcome and the schedule, I think it is a better accomplishment.
Yeah, I feel like that's why the general thought, and it's not everybody, it might be 51%. Like, I'm not speaking to everyone. I'm speaking to the majority, mm-hmm. which I don't think is that crazy. Like, it's not an egregious amount. It's not 90 to 10%. It's like 55 to 45%. A texter, and that's why the Texans fans are no better than Cowboys fans. Yeah, like, I don't understand why and I do get Brian's point when you look at the totality of franchise history, and we've been to the divisional round before. We've never seen an AFC conference championship, which is valid. Like, I totally understand that. But it's also, like, you've been conditioned to, like, hate your football team because, like, you've won back-to-back division titles coming from an 11-win team that people were saying they were never going to watch Texans football again until Cal McNair sold the team. Another texture, how can the fan base be happy when Brandon, when our quarterback threw for only 130 yards in the last game? See, I don't care about quarterback stats. Like, if C.J. Stroud threw for 5 yards and the Texans won every single game, why would you be unhappy? If the Texans threw the ball 5 times and they ran it 65 times, yet they won the game because of their running attack and their defense, shouldn't you be happy? Like, I don't care about style points, Blankers. I care about wins.
Right. You bring up the Cowboys. Look, they could have Dak Prescott of a year or two ago when he had the best regular season, you know, stats a quarterback could have from a yards perspective and from a lot of offensive categories, and they sucked, and they weren't close to the playoffs, and they underachieved all over the place. At a certain point, you have to realize there are going to be games based on if it's the defense, it's just the way the game goes, the turnovers, etc. You might not have a big offensive statistical game as a quarterback, or maybe even, you know, as it relates to other skill positions. But if you get that win and or your defense is dominant, it doesn't matter. You got another W, and as you hear this over and over again, but it's true, it's so hard to win in the NFL that if you're winning and you won a division, it doesn't matter if you have a top 10 running back, quarterback, wide receiver in the regular season, as long as they did what they had to do to get the win.
Yeah. The stats to me don't matter.
Now, Brian's making a disagreement.
Well, what you just said, Joel, after hearing all how pessimistic you are with the Packers, feels a little hollow. Like, they're going to coast into the playoffs, yet you're pessimistic about them every
single
week.
They're not winning the division. The Packers aren't winning the division.
But they're going to have basically the same record as the Texans, are they not? Or even maybe one game better?
I think,
and they're going to coast into the division or into the playoffs.
I think that the conferences matter. I think that the way you win matters. I think the fact that, you know, I look at it, and I've been a guy that's put CJ above Jordan Love over and over again. I would head and shoulders be a lot more positive if CJ Stroud was quarterbacking the Packers, because I see the kind of mistakes that the Packers quarterback makes.
But games are hard to win the NFL.
I understand that, but they're not winning the division. They're going to be one of the bottom wild card teams.
See, I think the difference here, though, is not so much the stats. Like, to the texter's point, was like, well, Stroud threw for 125 yards. How can you be happy about that? To me, it's more about your expectation of them. Like, I can listen to that argument all day. Like, that's a fair argument to have. My expectation of this Texans offense is not very high, so I don't think they can make a deep playoff run. Okay, I'm here for that conversation. But don't give me he threw for 125 yards, so the Texans can't win games. No, like, the numbers do not matter. And I think that Blanker's point whenever he talks about the Packers is he just doesn't believe in them having a deep playoff run,
mm-hmm.
which to me is different than them winning a game when their quarterback throws for 125 yards and then citing the 125 yards as the reason why he doesn't like the Packers' future or prospects this season. I think they're two very different things. Another texture, we have a case of delayed gratification with the Texans, probably. The thing is, we loved how they played on offense last year. Nobody expected them to regress. This year on offense, the defense looked really good, but since the offense look so bad, most people are very disappointed. I know I am. Maybe it is like offense is sexy, and because they're not seeing the sexiness of like this high-powered offense, which the offense hasn't been good. There's no arguing that. Maybe that's different. Like, I wonder what the city would feel if the Texans, because the Texans DVOA defensively is number one in the NFL. The Texans in defensive DVOA are the top team in the NFL. DVOA is telling us they have the best defense in the league. I wonder, but it's like 24th offensively. What if you flip those? Like, what if they were number one in offense, but number 24 in defense? Would the feeling be different in the city?
I think from the excitement, sexiness factor, I think that there would be a lot of excitement that this is like this unstoppable offense, like the Love You Blue days. But I don't think it should. I think that we've seen that there have been teams that have ridden their defense all the way to the Super Bowl. But I think that the offense is what's sexy. The offense is what excites people. The defense is like, yeah, it's great, but I'm still going to turn as quickly as I can to what the hell's wrong with our offense.
I think there's something there, though, because I think the feeling when your offense is great, when you feel like as a fan they cannot be stopped, and I know the same can be said for the Texans defense. It's certainly the same thing, but it doesn't feel that way, I think, to maybe to a casual fan. But when the offense is clicking, your quarterback's one of the best in the leagues, and you have a top offense and you feel like you can't be stopped, it feels like you're never out of a game. It feels like there's like no team in the league you can't beat. Like
it was the Chiefs the first couple Super Bowls where they didn't have a defense.
If we're at our A game, they can't stop us. So for some reason, whatever reason, people don't view that same way about when the defense is at the top. It still feels like, yeah, I mean, the defense is great, but the offense is going to put them in bad positions, and we still have to score so many points to win. Like, people don't view a dominant defense the same way they view a dominant offense. I think there's something there to that.
I think it would, not that it would be convincingly different, but I think it would skew things in favor of the Texans, because I do think that, you know, offense sells. I think it is sexy. Yep, I think it catches attention. A texture of the Astros gave the city a taste of winning. Now with the Rockets winning and the Texans, they're acting so spoiled. Maybe so. Maybe that's the element of it. Now, talking about Stroud, like, a lot of people are unhappy with the offense. Fair. I think it's a fair. I think it's a fair point to argue from. I've seen the Stroud hate. What do you want C.J. Stroud to be doing better? 713-780-ESPN. What do you think that C.J. should be doing better? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. If you want your business to operate better, you need HR&P. HR&P is going to make your business operate better. Mike Holla, U of H class of 1990, Go Cook, Chris Fisher over at HR&P, all of the fine people over at HR&P, they're the best. They've been protecting the interests of businesses for nearly 25 years. HR&P provides comprehensive human capital management services, including HR compliance, benefits administration, and payroll. HRP is also going to work with you to customize a plan for whatever you need. This is how they're going to make your business better. You get rid of some of the stuff you don't like doing. That way you can spend your time and your resources in the areas that you like doing. It's going to make your life easier. It's going to make your business easier. There's nothing cookie cutter about HRP. You need a little help, a lot of help, anything in between. HRP will create a plan for what you and your business needs. Their customer service, second to none. You'll never talk to a stranger on the other side of the line. You'll be calling someone familiar with you, familiar with your company. I can speak to that customer service anytime I have a question. Always get a quick response. Very easy to understand. Let HRP take on the demands of human resources and eliminate your HR burden so you can get back to growing your business. Give them a call at 281-880-6525 and let HRP customize a plan for you. 281-880-6525 or visit them online. HRP.net. That's HRP.net.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
You found the Killer Bees. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
2024 ESPN 97.5 Christmas party right around the corner. Join us at Nick Place on December 23rd for all the partying, all the games. From John and Lance for the Killer Bees, come hang out with us and get the Christmas week kicked off. 713-780-ESPN HRP listener line. 713-780-3776. I almost forgot the number. Been out of work too long. A texture in the Hive. It isn't the wins and losses that are concerning anyone. It's the offensive regression that everyone is concerned with. I think that's a fair point. I think it's the best argument. Because win-loss record, you're fine. Division championship, you're fine. You won it. It's more about the eye test and if you think the Texans can, like, make a run. And if you were to point out a flaw for this team, every team's flawed in the NFL, by the way. But if you're looking specifically at the Houston Texans' flaw,
Yeah.
The offensive side of the ball is way behind the defense. The defense is one of the best in the NFL, if not the best in the NFL, whereas the offense might be one of the bottom, like, one of the teams in the bottom 10. Like, it might be a top 10 bad defense. It's like in the bottom third of the NFL. So I understand the offensive regression. I point to the offensive line. I think it's pretty simple that it's the offensive line. Like, I think that's what's holding them back.
It definitely is. And again, because there's more focus on the offense in the NFL, there's more excitement and sexiness because of how a team performs offensively. There's almost, I don't want to say a disdain, but there's a kind of a blinder on to where, yeah, okay, defense is supposed to be played, and yeah, that's great that they're better than average and they're better than most, but I really need to focus on what's supposed to drive this team. It's offensive, you know, the offensive success. You can have a defensive identity and be a successful team in the NFL. It's just not as sexy.
No.
But at the same time, when you look at it from an offensive perspective, it's easy to point the finger at the quarterback, at the passing, at the running. And not, but to be naive enough to say, well, that it's the running game, or it's the passing game, or it's the quarterback, and not be able to connect it all to the fact that the offensive line has been way worse than it was a year ago when it wasn't great, and that it's from a functionality standpoint offensively, that offensive line can be directly correlated to everything that we just said hasn't been what it was a year ago.
Yeah, when I was went back and watched the film on this, I don't remember the day they've been running together, but I think it's a little bit of a math equation, too. Like, the Texans are forced to commit, like, extra bodies to protect C.J. Stroud because the offensive line hasn't been good. Whether it's a tight end staying in protection, whether it's a running back staying in protection, sometimes it's both. Sometimes you have max protect with both the tight end and the running back. Add that up. Five offensive linemen, tight end, running back is seven. You have your quarterback, that's eight. That means you're sending three guys on routes. Like, good luck winning in the NFL with three options for your quarterback. And there are times, too, when the defense is only sending four. And, oh, by the way, sometimes they're winning with four against your seven. So if a four-man rush is getting to the quarterback against a seven-man protection, they have seven in coverage, you have three guys running routes, how is a quarterback going to succeed? Like, yeah. To me, it's pretty simple.
That's the most aggravating thing to me. And, again, as many times as we watch and rewatch games and watch play after play after play, and if you don't want to hear it from us, you can take it from a million different people nationally that watch quarterback play, offenses, the NFL. There's not a whole lot of people that are out there pointing a finger at C.J. Stroud not being a franchise quarterback, saying that this is something with him, not them, as a unit, because of the fact that when you have, and we've been harping on this for weeks, when your internal clock as a quarterback is off, whether it's sped up or the year before you got so comfortable because you had a gluttony of time that you don't have anymore, it changes everything in how the offense functions and how you as a quarterback react. And you can see it, and it doesn't take that much film study to just compare last year to this year and realize CJ is under duress on almost every play. CJ doesn't have the time. And to your point, when you have to use backs and tight ends to chip and try to, you know, overreact to creating space for your running game and or your passing game, you're limited in who's going to be able to help him from a skill position. And that's all part of and directly correlated to the less than play of your offensive line.
Hiver winning in the wild card round and getting blown out in the divisional round makes the season worse because of the expectation. I guess expectations are relative, especially when this is a year when there's no dominant team in the AFC. I mean, you can say that, but the Chiefs have only lost one game.
Yeah.
Like, they haven't been killing teams, but they're pretty dominant when you look at their win-loss record. Another Hiver, if you told us going into the season that they would be where they are now with this offense being this bad, we would take it every day. That's probably true. I hate to say it, another Hiver, but with all the high hopes we had for this offense, this division title is because of our defense. I don't know why that's bad, though. Like, if you were to try to model this team after another Super Bowl winning team in memory, I'm not going to say recent memory because it's been quite a while, mm-hmm. I would probably go to Brady's first one because, like, their offense wasn't great, but they had a really good defense. And then Big Ben. Remember when Big Ben won?
Sure.
Did they win it or did they lose? I can't remember. But he went to it early in his career, and they had a really good defense.
They lost, like, to Green Bay in Dallas.
That's
that
right.
Year.
Yeah. That's right.
So, yeah, like, but he won a Super Bowl in a second
he
season.
He did. They beat Seattle, right?
Yeah,
that
Seattle.
Might be the year I'm thinking about. Yeah, one Super of those Bowl early 40. Years. But, like, there have been teams, not necessarily like the last 5 years, because we've looked at it, like, offenses are what you need to win a championship these days as opposed to defenses. I think that old saying is antiquated. But you can look in, you know, the past, not too distant past, And there are teams that win it all with a dominant defense and a pretty mediocre offense.
Well, I think, and to put kind of tie it all together, if you're the Chiefs this year, the reason why everybody is pointing fingers and thinking they're vulnerable is because their defense is pretty damn good,
yeah,
and their offense hasn't been. And it's a microcosm of what we're dealing with the Texans. However, the skins on the wall and the back-to-back titles and the quarterback that they have leads everybody to believe it's okay because it's the Chiefs, Andy Reid, and Patrick Mahomes, and they're going to fix it at the right time and be okay. Whereas from a Texans perspective, they don't have the skins on the wall and they don't have the guys with the resumes at those positions to be able to say the same thing. So now it's easier to say they get a pass offensively because of their defense than the Texans to have one of the best defenses in the league because of the fact that, that people can't buy into and get on board with the same people, I mean, the different people that the Texans have from a coaching, play calling, and execution standpoint.
Yeah, no one's saying that it's going to happen. We're just saying that that is the model for the Texans. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Let's get to the Stroud side of this because I've seen a lot of Stroud disdain coming, especially after Sunday's game. Like, I saw people saying they're out on C.J. Stroud.
Yep.
What do you want him to be doing differently? Like, where can he be better? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.